Welcome to Power Play. I'm Evan Solomon. On the program today, Omicron confirmed in the U.S. Are more travel restrictions coming?
We need to be prepared and ready if we need to adjust that decision to include travelers from the U.S.
But we're going to be super cautious. Everything's on the table right now.
U.S. is the only country currently exempted from the new Canadian Omicron restrictions. Is that all about to change? In moments, we're going to get you the latest from Washington. Then Canada's Public Safety Minister, Marco Mendicino, will join us to give us Canada's next move on this. And surprising political unity over the ban on conversion therapy.
It's just a wonderful day for kids growing up in a world that I didn't grow up in. And it's a pretty great day.
It was an emotional moment, and it took the government, as you can just see from Rob Oliphant's reaction, by surprise. The Conservatives moved unanimous consent for the government's ban on conversion therapy today. That means there's no wrangling at committees. The bill will speed directly to the Senate. What did it take to suddenly get this all-party support? How quickly will this ban on conversion therapy become law? Minister Randy Boisseneau, who is standing behind Rob Oliphant in that last clip, joins us to talk about that. And a billion-dollar COVID boondoggle in Ontario?
Were some mistakes made? Obviously, Mr. Speaker, but that's what happens when you're trying to get supports out as quickly as possible.
How could the Premier shovel out millions in grants to companies without any paper trail of how those decisions were made while abandoning thousands of small businesses?
Speed versus prudence. How did Ontario misspend almost $1 billion on COVID supports? Did the speed of the response lead to reckless spending? Ontario's Auditor General released a new report with devastating findings on COVID spending. How did it get so wrong? We'll find out when the Auditor General from Ontario, Bonnie Lissick, joins us. This is Power Play. Let's get to the players.
The individual is self-quarantining, and all close contacts have been contacted, and all close contacts thus far have tested negative. The individual was fully vaccinated and experience mild symptoms, which are improving at this point.
Are new COVID restrictions coming from the U.S. as soon as tomorrow? Today, the Omicron variant has been confirmed in the United States. We know the Biden administration is considering some travel restrictions. What will they be? What's on the table? And could the newly reopened Canada-U.S. border be heading back to some kind of lockdown right as the holidays are upon us? We begin our coverage tonight with CTV's Richard Madden. He's in Washington. Rich, give us the details. The case has been confirmed in the U.S. What are officials saying about the risk to Americans?
Well, the message has been similar throughout the week, either with President Joe Biden or his chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, saying don't panic, but stay vigilant and be concerned. And obviously, officials had believed that the Omicron variant was in the United States before it was officially identified. And here we are. So you laid it out. It was detected in San Francisco. The patient appears to be suffering mild symptoms and is in quarantine. However, this dovetails towards what we can expect tomorrow when President Biden outlines his next steps to contain this new variant with more measures. And the White House is mulling over several of them, including a test the moment visitors or Americans land in the United States, the day they land or up to 3 days, and possible 7-day self-quarantine. I'd be surprised if that one is enacted, but that is one of the options that they are considering. So tomorrow is going to be a significant day, particularly with this variant now identified in the U.S. and the possibility that this could be the next big wave to rip through this country, because the vaccination rate is lower than where you are in Canada, and there's a lot of concern that there's lots of room for this new variant to spread.
Okay, so just real quick, Joe Biden also talked about booster shots. They're trying to crank up their booster shots. That may work for some of the population. As you say, there's a big unvaccinated portion there. What time do we expect to hear news about the U.S.? Because for Canadians traveling, boy, as you said, a 7-day quarantine would be just devastating. I would be amazed at that. But this could throw us back to the height of the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, I first of all, Biden himself said, you know, this country is not going back into lockdowns or further major restrictions that we saw this time last year. So that's off the table, according to what the president's own words. But will they put more restrictions for people crossing into the border. There are certain restrictions here in the U.S. that don't apply to Canada because, as we note, Canada's vaccination rate is much higher than the U.S. However, that said, whatever the president and the administration come out with tomorrow, that could have a significant impact on international visitors, including those coming from Canada. But for the last few weeks since the border reopened, you know, a lot of the measures have been relaxed and eased. It would be very concerning if they cap these restrictions right as we enter the holiday season.
All right, so we'll watch that tomorrow. CTV's Richard Madden in Washington watching the latest developments on that. Rich, thank you. Let me move back to the Canadian response. So Omicron confirmed in the U.S. Just yesterday, the U.S. was the only destination in the world exempted from the new Canadian travel restrictions. All travelers returning from all other countries need to be tested when they arrive at Canadian airports. Are restrictions now coming for the U.S. travel? Joining me now to find out a little more, Public Safety Minister Marco Mendicino. Minister, great to have you back on the program. Look, thanks, I don't know what you expect to hear, but give us a sense. Are you expecting to hear new border restrictions coming from the U.S. tomorrow?
Well, we're going to stay in contact with our U.S. counterparts, and certainly to the extent that we can continue to coordinate, have strong lines of communication around the public health care measures at our shared borders, then that will, I think, be in the best interests of both of our peoples. But the measures that we introduced yesterday are very prudent. They're responsible. They're informed by the best available advice that we're getting from our health care experts. And I would just point out to your viewers, this is not the first go-around for Canadians. They know what it takes to manage this pandemic, particularly when it comes to travel plans. We put in place some additional restrictions around those foreign nationals who are transiting around those countries of concern. We also reintroduced some additional mandatory testing, again, all informed by the best advice that we're getting right now. And the reason why it's important that we follow this advice, Evan, is so that we protect the progress that we've made thus far. Holiday seasons are all around. We hope for the best, but we also have to be prepared to deal with this new variant of concern, and those measures do that.
I guess the question is, why was the U.S. exempted from restrictions? I mean, there's already questions about, there's 10 countries all in the African continent, but, you know, the Netherlands has it, the U.K. has it, Japan has it. They were not exempted. Japan's closed all foreign travel, by the way. They can still fly to Canada. But the U.S. was exempted from restrictions. And I guess the question is, A, can you tell us why? And B, didn't you think that people would say, okay, we can't land in Canada from one of these countries, we'll just land in the U.S. and boost across the border and basically reroute around the Canadian restrictions?
Yeah, it's a fair question, Evan, and I would just point out that, again, the decisions around which countries are listed and which ones are not are informed by the advice that we're getting from our public health care officials, and we put a lot of credence, a lot of weight into that advice. The other thing that I would say is throughout the pandemic, there has been a significant degree of coordination and communication between Canada and the United States, and that those conversations will continue. And the last thing that I would say is that there is still randomized testing for some travelers who are returning from the United States. That's one of the layers of protection that we are building on many. And at the very bottom of all this is that our paramount goal here is to protect the health and safety of Canadians. And we will continue to do whatever it takes to do to achieve that goal.
Can you just open up this black box of the advice you're getting? Because I think Canadians would like to know why you can't, there's a travel ban on Egypt, why there's a travel ban on South Africa, but not on Japan or the Netherlands or the UK. What is the threshold here to have a ban? Is it epidemiology? Is it vaccine rates? Is it, like, what is it? Because we keep hearing we're getting advice. What's the advice? And, you know, eventually the accountability is with people like you.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's all of the above. So, for example, we do take a look at the epidemiological context in each of the regions and the countries that have been listed. We look at the degree of community transmission. We look at the vaccination rates. We look at the prevalence of the virus traced back to the variant of concern. And we take that advice from our public health care officials, and we use that advice to inform how best to respond to this new variant of concern. And what these measures do, Evan, is that it provides the government with some very precious time to learn more about the variant, to determine whether or not it's more transmissible or virulent, to determine whether or not there are more negative symptoms that can be attributed to it, and to determine, most importantly, whether or not the vaccines that we currently have approved are effective in protecting Canadians. And I think Canadians understand that. They understand that there are some trade-offs that are necessary when it comes to travel plans, and we've put so much work into this. And this will allow us that time to be sure that we can manage this new variant of concern.
Okay. Well, look, everything depends on what happens tomorrow. If the U.S. decides to slap restrictions on the border, then we're in a whole new world here. So I don't know if the government's prepared to that. But can you just real quick, some details. Are you expecting massive delays at borders now? Because Canada apparently doesn't even have enough tests to do over 30,000 a day.
Well, I just say we're not going to spare any expense when it comes to implementing these public health care measures. And will there be some additional time at the border? Yes, there will, to be perfectly candid. But I think, again, Canadians understand that the trade-off there is their health and safety. And so that's the balance that we attempt to achieve. I will give a shout-out to CBSA officers and other frontline officers. And I would, encourage Canadians to be patient. We're putting in place these measures because we want to protect you. And because in the past, when we have introduced measures, we've been successful at managing and containing the virus, and that's what we're doing again right now.
Minister, yesterday I talked to the transport minister at Momo Al Gabra. He wasn't sure then who will pay for the quarantine hotels if someone has to use one of these quarantine hotels. Then there was confirmed later in the night the traveler has to pay. How much will they cost?
Well, those costs are going to be laid out, but I will say again, this is a part of the trade-off that is necessary to protect the health and safety of Canadians. And we are providing supports to Canadians throughout this pandemic in a variety of ways, right, and we'll continue to be there to support Canadians through this new stage.
The reason I'm asking, Minister, it's urgent because somebody might have to do it within days. Last time it was like $2,000. People can't afford that. Are you saying this rule could change and someone's going to be hit up with a... Now, again, I know they're only at these hotels until they get a negative or positive result, but could it be thousands of dollars?
Well, look, there will be some costs that are borne by the traveler. They're necessary costs. But on the other hand, the government is bearing the costs of making sure that we provide tests. And most importantly, that we're providing everyone with free and safe vaccines. And the most important thing that I can just emphasize in conclusion is that we need to get everybody vaccinated here in Canada and around the world. And that's how we get back to life pre-COVID.
Two things. Will there be warnings, do you reckon, for people not to travel over the holidays, or older people, or people who have immunocompromised? Or is Canada going to warn those people, be careful, don't travel over the holidays?
We're getting advice in real time. We have a whole branch of government, many branches of government, that are studying this new variant of concern very closely. We're taking it very seriously. And, at the end of the day, our view is, that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure in the long run. And so the measures we're taking now are necessary. If advice changes, we'll be sure to communicate it.
Last thing, Minister, new variant, new concerns about supports for people, because there's now new concerns that we could go back into some situation. How does the government get new supports for people and businesses hurt by COVID when your government hasn't set up any committees yet to examine the bill that is needed, haven't released the mandate letters, haven't picked parliamentary secretaries? I'm just trying to get a sense. Your government said 2.5 months ago it's urgent to get back to work. How do you pass legislation needed to help people when you haven't even set up the committees to study the bill?
Well, I'd say two things. First, we've been working throughout, even before coming back to Parliament as a government. And the second thing that I would say is that at every critical stage in this pandemic, we have had Canadians' backs. Whether you're a worker, a family, or a small business who's trying to get through, we have been there to support Canadians, and we will going forward. We know this has been a marathon, and we have made tremendous progress, in part because we have put in place the public health care measures that are necessary at the border, as we are doing again now. But we're not out of the woods yet. This new variant of concern is a moment to pause, be sure that we have vaccines that work, and then hopefully we'll be able to carry on. But we're doing what is necessary to protect the health and safety of all Canadians.
Right. Again, as you know, the question was about get the committees to sign, to get the legislation passed before the break in about 13 days. But we'll see what happens. I know that's not your main job. Minister Mendicino, I do appreciate it. All eyes on what the U.S. does tomorrow morning. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Okay, so that's your public safety minister, Marco Mendicino. We're going to come back to that in a minute in the press gallery, but it was a stunning moment of unanimity. I want to show you something that happened today that took everybody off guard. Check this out.
And referred to a committee of the whole.
The House unanimously agreed to pass the bill to ban conversion therapy. Conversion therapy, of course, is a discredited practice that attempts to change a person's sexual orientation or gender expression using psychological or religious interventions. This was the government's third attempt to ban conversion therapy. The first attempt died when the federal government prorogued parliament. The second attempt shut down when the election was called by the federal government in August. This successful third attempt expanded legislation, though, to include children and adults from being subjected to this practice. And it includes wider-reaching vocabulary of what constitutes conversion therapy. The ban was one of the four priorities for the new parliamentary session laid out by the Liberals. This was expected to be controversial. More than 60 Conservatives MPs had once voted against this bill, but it sped through today. Why? After a Conservative MP, Rob Moore, stood up and raised a motion asking the House to move what's called Bill C-4 straight to the Senate without study or amendment, unanimous consent. That resulted in raucous applause from the chamber. So now the bill goes to the Senate. So there's your civics lesson on a way to fast-track a bill. But how did this rare moment of unanimity happen, and what does it mean? The tourism minister, Randy Boisneau, joins us now. Minister, thanks for being here. You tell me, was it a surprise when Conservative MP Rob Moore stood up and said, let's do this all together now, let's get this thing done?
It was indeed a surprise, Evan. And look, it's a great day for Canadians. It's great to be with you on the show again. Look, we had echoes. We had, you know, discussions with colleagues across the way in all parties. And this was, you said it, a moment of unanimity. There are amazing things that you can do in the Canadian House of Commons when you have unanimous consent. And just so that everybody who's watching understands, it means that everyone in that chamber and tuning in hybrid agreed that this bill should proceed to the Senate for them to do what they need to do so that this bill protecting Canadians can be passed into law.
Yeah, this has been a long time coming. How soon can it get through the Senate? Can it pass before the winter break?
Well, look, that's entirely in the hands of the Senate, but I think senators will have heard at the press conference and from their own constituents, their own people around the country that, you know, hearts and minds have shifted on this issue. We heard largely, you know, during the election that people wanted us to work together. We've demonstrated that from all parties today in the House of Commons. I think it's really important for the Senate to, you know, tread carefully to do what they need to do, to approach this issue sensitively, to not traumatize people who had to come to committee at the House of Commons stage last time. And it's an opportunity for all senators to do the right thing and to be on the right side of history and to end conversion therapy in Canada and to demonstrate our leadership on human rights issues and the protection of LGBTQ2 rights around the world.
What are penalties if someone is found forcing someone to undergo conversion therapy or performing a conversion therapy?
Well, you know, the penalties in the years. I think one of them is 10 years. And I have to congratulate Minister Lametti and Minister Ian for listening to community. Evan, if you go back to 2019, when we first started to really talk about this as a caucus and as a government, this was an issue that, you know, came to me when I was special advisor to the Prime Minister on LGBTQ2 issues. And it was a deeply traumatizing issue. This had been happening across the country. And one study out of Vancouver from the Center for Community Research indicated that 20,000 gay men in Canada had been subjected to conversion therapy practices. And so to amplify those voices and to see the legislation be stalled last time, but now pass the House so quickly today is definitely a moment in time.
Yeah, and by the way, it was interesting to see Liberal MPs giving shout-outs to Conservatives like Michelle Rempel-Garner, who they said had been very much a supporter of this. And it was really a moment of unanimity. I just want to ask you personally, because it was very emotional when Rob Oliphant, who's a member of the LGBTQ+ community, as are you, you're very open about it, Randy Boisneau, just on a personal note, because politics affects individuals, this one affects you. What did it mean to have that moment in the House?
I'll remember this well into my 90s. I'll be in my rocking chair, maybe even wearing this scarf and remembering today because it protects people. I mean, nobody can consent to torture, Evan, and nobody should be tortured or changed for who they are. I mean, to every LGBTQ2 person watching today, you're beautiful and awesome who you are. And you don't need to be changed. You don't need to be fixed. We are who we are. We're born this way, and you're your perfect self right now. And that's what the chamber said. The chamber today said that we belong, and we don't have nearly enough LGBTQ2 representatives on any side of the house. And I think this says to some queer kids out there that they can be parliamentarian someday, that they can be premiers of provinces someday, that they can, you know, lead and be heard. And I think, I mean, I went right up to Michelle Rempel-Garner, gave her a big hug. I went and talked to Melissa Lantzman. I went and, you know, said hi to Karen Vecchio. I shook the hand of the conservative leader. And then I did the same with the NDP, with the Bloc, and with the, you know, the Green member, because this was unanimous consent. Not a single voice said no. Everybody said yes today.
It was a pretty remarkable moment. We don't see that very often in a very divisive parliament. It happened today on the ban of conversion therapy. Yeah. And you're right to point out the United Nations has called this a form of torture. Minister Randy Boisinot, you know, we often do a lot of partisanship here, but we got to celebrate those moments when all parliamentarians come together. And this is one of those rare moments. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Evan. All the best.
Okay, that's Randy Boisinot. And it was really remarkable. We'll talk more about this as well. All the parties just coming together. But coming up, booster shots here versus vaccine help for the rest of the world.
We will not be able to beat this pandemic unless the entire world is vaccinated.
The NDP are calling for Canada to support a global push to open vaccine access and production possibilities and drop the patents. Is Canada withholding support? UN Ambassador Bob Rae joins us on the vaccine equity issue next. Stay with us. It has become a global moral dilemma, vaccine safety in your own country versus vaccine equity for the whole world. With the arrival of the new variant, Omicron, should countries like Canada be giving booster shots to everyone, you and I, or send those precious shots to countries that have low vaccination rates and are desperate for protection, like countries in the continent of Africa? Can Canada do both? Look, the arrival of Omicron has called into question the success of the global effort to share vaccine doses. It's called COVAX. Canada has committed to donate the equivalent of at least 200 million doses to that COVAX facility. That's the Global Vaccine Sharing Initiative that aims to ensure equitable access to developing countries. But the rollout has been slow. There are renewed calls for the government to also waive the vaccine patents at the World Trade Organization in order to expand global access to vaccine production. Canada is part of the WTO's discussion on waiving the trade-related intellectual property rights agreement. It's known as TRIPS. But the federal government have not been forthcoming on their official position. For example, listen to this.
This variant has also shown very clearly that we will not be able to beat this pandemic unless the entire world is vaccinated. So why does the Prime Minister continue to defend the interests and the profits of wealthy pharmaceutical companies rather than ensuring that every country in the world can produce vaccines in their home countries so they can vaccinate their populations?
Canada is taking leadership at the World Trade Organization to work with the international community on ensuring that the global trading system contributes to removing barriers to vaccine access. We're advancing progress on these issues, which include IP, yes, but also supply chain, production, and export restrictions.
The government has contributed $220 million to COVAX, but Canada has also received and taken AstraZeneca vaccines through the initiative, which, by the way, it's entitled to do. According to UNICEF, 972,000 doses were shipped to Canada, but Canada has also shared about 8.3 million of its surplus doses. So as provinces roll out booster shot campaigns, will Omicron shift Canada's vaccine priorities to the rest of the world? Let me bring in the ambassador to the United Nations for Canada, Bob Rae, to find out what Canada is doing on the global stage. First of all, Ambassador Rae, always a pleasure to have you on the program. How do you balance the need to get booster shots for Canadians who are clamoring for them, as in the U.S. where you are, and vaccine equity throughout the rest of the world?
Well, I think in a democratic country, it's pretty hard for a political party that is in government to say to its own people, we're not going to provide you with the protection that you need. I don't think it's possible to do that. I think we have to do, as you suggested, perhaps, we have to do both. Every government has an obligation to its own electorate to ensure that they're vaccinated. We also have an obligation to share and to do whatever we can to increase production. And this, I think, is something which is quite exciting. I mean, Moderna has agreed to waive its patents with respect to a project in South Africa. Canada has agreed to invest $50 million in creating a hub in South Africa, which will be a hub for Southern Africa for the production of the vaccine. And I think that's the way we should be going. I mean, Canada was very much involved in these negotiations. We've been very much part of doing what we can to increase production. I mean, I hear the rhetoric about the profits of Big Pharma. Big Pharma does not produce in Canada. Canada is, unfortunately, whatever for all sorts of historical reasons, we're not a producer of the vaccine at the moment. So let's focus on what we can do globally to increase production, which is what we're doing. We're doing everything we can to get voluntary technology transfer working, because you can waive a patent, but you can waive a patent if you don't have the technology transfer to go along with that, then you haven't made as much progress as you think. So we have to do that at the same time as do everything we can to ensure that Canadians are protected. I mean, that's an obligation of any democratically elected government, is to ensure that their own populations are being kept as safe as possible. I think that's an important obligation.
I understand, but I've been clamoring on this for, I mean, Stephen Lewis was on this first when he said Canada has not supported this waiver called the TRIPS waiver, which I explained earlier. South Africa, India, and more than 100 countries had said more than a year ago, please waive the patents so we can at least begin domestic production of generics, as happened in the AIDS crisis. Canada kept saying, we're not opposed to it, we're discussing it. But they kept punting the vote down the WTO. Very difficult, saying we're supporting in other ways. But South Africa was livid about that. India was livid about that. Now, by the way, we've also got a travel ban against South Africa. Again, how does Canada walk the walk on vaccine equity when it hasn't supported one of the things that most of these countries really want, which is the waiver of patents?
The key thing, let's look at the things where we agree on there. We agree on the need to increase production. We agree and to work with companies that are willing to waive their patents and to engage productively with the countries that want to produce more. That's exactly what they're doing. I talked to the South African ambassador here at the UN all the time. She is very appreciative of the fact that Canada is staying at the table in a way that tries to create the conversation that leads to a better place. You can have 100 countries passing, saying they don't want to pass the TRIPS waiver. You can have that, but if you don't have an effective commitment from the large producing countries like Germany, like the United States, like the UK, like the Swiss, all of whom are resolutely, so far, not moving on this question of the waiver.
But the U.S. is now supporting the TRIPS waiver.
The U.S. has flipped on that. No, I'm sorry, Evan, you're not up to date. When you look at the actual conversations that are taking place at the table, the problem that we face is getting to a practical deal at the table in Geneva. And that's where Canada, I think, has been an effective interlocutor with those countries that understand it has to be practically done. Let me come back to my basic point. You can waive a patent, but unless you can also transfer technology, and in some cases of the mRNA drugs, it's quite complex. If you can get that technology effectively transferred to hubs of expertise, as we're trying to set up in South Africa, and as I said, we've agreed to commit $15 million to that hub and work with other countries in producing hubs, then we're not going to make the practical progress that we need to make. But there's no argument, Evan, with what you're saying is we have to find the very best and quickest ways to increase production. And we do. We do have to do that. It's hard to do it without the full cooperation of all of the people at the table, including the private sector.
Right. Yeah, I would only say that I read Ambassador Catherine Tai, who is, of course, meeting with our ambassador today, the U.S. Trade Representative Catherine Tai. She said that the Biden-Harris administration supports the TRIPS waiver. So, you know, maybe they're dragging their feet on it, but I know they have been much more open about supporting it. But as you say, I know there's a lag between saying that and getting the production. I appreciate that. The big issue here is speed, as you know. The virus doesn't care about these lags. The virus is mutating and causing these kind of issues. I got about 10 seconds because we've got to go to Alberta, sir, and I know you understand the news better. Are you hearing that the U.S. is going to take some measures on Omicron tomorrow on their borders?
I haven't heard directly what they're doing, but I suspect every country is doing what Canada is doing, and that is trying to stay safe and at the same time trying to base whatever border measures are taken on hard evidence. And I think that's the line that everybody's trying to walk. I would be very surprised if there weren't additional announcements from a number of countries because of the speed with which the new variant is emerging.
All right, I got to leave it there. Ambassador Ray, Ambassador to the United Nations, Bob Ray. Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you very much.
I do have to jump back. Great to talk to you. I want to go live to Alberta now. These things happen. Their update on COVID. Let's listen in.
6 months ago, and they can receive their third dose as early as Monday next week. As a reminder, eligibility for boosters is based on birth date. So we ask you to please wait until you turn 60 to book an appointment. Going forward, we will open up bookings to additional age groups as long as we have supply. We anticipate that bookings for all adults age 18 and over will be open by early next year, but the exact timing will depend on the volume of appointments booked and the availability of vaccine supply. Booster doses will be administered by appointment and walk-ins at some sites. Appointments will be available at more than 1,400 pharmacies across the province, as well as AHS sites and participating physician clinics and clinics on reserve. I want to remind you that booster doses continue to be available for all groups we've previously announced, and these include Albertans 70 and older, those in continuing care and other congregate living settings, First Nation, Métis, and Inuit people who are age 18 and older, healthcare workers who received their second dose less than 8 weeks after their first, individuals who received one dose of Janssen or two doses of AstraZeneca, and individuals with eligible immunocompromising conditions. To date, over 373,000 people in these groups have received their boosters, and that number will keep growing as more Albertans reach their six-month mark. All the information announced today is available at alberta.ca/vaccine. I encourage you to review the information there and check back to see if any timelines have shifted. If they do, we will, of course, keep Albertans updated in the coming days and weeks. We are also committed to keeping the public updated on the spread of the Omicron variant and any new information we have on its severity, transmissibility, or how it responds to vaccines. Dr. Hinshaw will have more to say on this in a moment. The Omicron variant's arrival in Alberta is another reason we encourage all Albertans to get fully vaccinated if you haven't done so already. Vaccines, combined with current public health measures, remain the most effective way to protect yourself, your loved ones, and your community from COVID-19 and its variants. If you're already fully vaccinated, I urge you to book your booster dose as soon as you are eligible. Thank you, and now I invite Dr. Hinshaw to come to the podium.
Thank you, Minister, and good afternoon, everyone. I want to begin today by thanking everyone who participated in last night's telephone town hall on pediatric COVID-19 vaccines. There was a great turnout and strong engagement from participants, and I am grateful to my colleagues Dr. Jim Kellner, Dr. Cora Constantinescu, and Dr. Cherie Nyssen-Jordan, who shared their expertise and insights. A recording of last night's town hall is now available at alberta.ca/town hall. Turning to today's update, over the last 24 hours, we identified 430 new cases of COVID-19 and completed about 10,800 tests, Our positivity rate is 4.1%. There are currently active alerts or outbreaks in 147 schools. 8 of these schools have had 10 or more cases infectious in the school in the last 14 days. Our hospitalizations are slowly declining over time. There are currently 424 people being treated for COVID-19 in hospital, including 79 in the ICU. Having said that, it is important to note that these numbers are still very high, and current ICU COVID numbers are double the peak of ICU impact from an average influenza season. Sadly, 7 new deaths have been reported to Alberta Health in the past 24 hours. I send my condolences to the people grieving the loss of these Albertans and anyone else who has died. I know that their passing leaves a hole in their communities and their families. As part of my update today, I have additional information to share about Omicron cases in Alberta. We have identified an additional 2 cases in a recently returned traveler from South Africa and the Netherlands and a household contact. As with the case I spoke about yesterday, these individuals have done nothing wrong and should not be stigmatized. They are isolating, and all appropriate public health follow-up is underway. To date, only mild symptoms have been reported, and these individuals are recovering at home. As with the case we identified yesterday, this is not unexpected, and it is a testament to the excellent work of our public health lab and frontline public health teams. We will identify travel-related cases going forward, and this is the purpose of our measures, to prevent transmission risk from importations and slow any spread. It is also a reminder of the importance of following all current public health measures, including border restrictions, to minimize the risk of COVID-19 importations and transmission. Today's announcement on the expansion of our vaccination program is another important milestone in the pandemic response. My team and I, along with the Alberta Advisory Committee on Immunization and our national counterparts, continue to monitor the latest evidence on vaccine effectiveness, viral spread, and emerging variants of concern, including Omicron. A month ago, when we announced booster doses for those with an increased risk of waning vaccine protection and an increased risk of severe outcomes from COVID-19, there wasn't evidence that conclusively supported the need for boosters in the general population. Since then, more evidence has become available, and we will soon be approaching the 6-month milestone from when the vast majority of adult Albertans received their second dose. For more than a year now, researchers and public health officials worldwide have been gathering and assessing data to learn more about vaccine effectiveness over time, and how that might be different for people of different ages and with different risk factors. We've been collecting and analyzing our own data in Alberta as well. Fortunately, the protection against severe disease and hospitalization remains high, even after 2 doses for most individuals. But those who are older and those with chronic conditions have a greater risk of severe outcomes if they have breakthrough infection. Because of this, and given the fact that increased transmission risk in the winter months is lining up with some waning vaccine effectiveness against infection over time, the current evidence supports expanding booster doses to add an additional layer of protection. We still have many people in our communities who have no protection, so offering 3rd doses to more people will be 1 additional measure to help boost population protection and minimize the spread of COVID-19 going forward. As the Health Minister said, the timing of this expansion should line up well with the 6-month markers for the vast majority of fully vaccinated adult Albertans. Most individuals outside the high-risk groups prioritized for earlier 3rd doses received their 2nd doses in June and July, which means they will be eligible for 3rd doses in December and January. This expansion is also in line with the Alberta Advisory Committee on Immunization's discretionary recommendation that all Albertans 18 years of age and older be offered a booster dose at 6 months after their completion of their series. Whether you are eligible for a 1st, 2nd, or 3rd dose, I urge you to get vaccinated as soon as you can. to improve your protection against COVID-19, both for yourself and those around you. If you're still deciding about the COVID-19 vaccine for your young child, age 5 to 11, I encourage you to listen to last night's town hall recording or speak with a medical professional who can answer your questions and provide you with accurate information as you consider your options. On the topic of pediatric vaccines, I also want to address a very concerning trend. We're hearing reports that some parents are withdrawing their consent for all vaccines at schools because they're worried that their child may receive a COVID-19 vaccine without their knowledge. I want to be crystal clear that no child will receive any vaccine in school without their parent or guardian's consent and knowledge. Parents can be confident that if they have consented to their child receiving routine immunizations, this is the only vaccine their child will receive at school. Parents have the final say on all types of vaccine for their children. It is critical that children continue to receive their standard immunizations to help protect them from diseases like measles, hepatitis B, human papillomavirus, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis. Even in the middle of the pandemic, these diseases and other viruses like seasonal influenza continue to pose a potential risk, and we must do everything we can to minimize them. This includes getting the flu vaccine that is widely available for all Albertans 6 months of age and older. For anyone 5 and older, influenza vaccine is readily available at a pharmacy near you. For those under 5 and their families, influenza vaccine can be accessed through Alberta Health Services. I encourage all of us to take advantage of the protection this vaccine offers. Thank you, and we're happy to take questions.
Thanks. Thanks, Dr. Hinshaw. We have just one reporter, it looks like, at the mic in the room here and a couple waiting on the line. So I think we'll start in the room. Go ahead. First question, please.
Hi, Anna Juncker from the Edmonton Journal and Sun. This is a question for the minister.
Okay, so that's Alberta. They have a case of Omicron as well, and people over 60 are going to be able to start booking their third shots as early as Monday. So there you go. Booster shots coming all across this country. So look, all this is happening as the world nervously awaits details on the Omicron variant. Many countries, like Canada, have brought in travel restrictions to try to keep it from spreading quickly. It is still coming. But as officials monitor the spread, the federal government said more travel restrictions could be coming. And remember, everyone's keeping an eye on the Biden administration. Tomorrow morning, they're going to have an announcement on maybe new restrictions. After today, they confirmed a case of Omicron, no surprise, in that country. Look at Japan and Israel have already basically barred all foreigners from coming to those countries. So are we into a fifth wave? Tanya McCharles on the press gallery today, the senior reporter with the Toronto Star in the Ottawa Bureau. Carl Dockstader, co-host of the One Dish, One Mic, and executive director of the Niagara Regional Native Center. And our special guest is Dr. Isaac Bogosh, infectious disease specialist. Also, Lisa Raitt, the former Conservative Transport Minister, now Vice Chair of Global Investment Banking at CIBC. Good to see all of you. Doc, let me just start with you. Pretty remarkable thing seeing a new variant. We knew this was coming. We're all expecting new restrictions. Just give us your sense. Is this new variant, is the health community bracing for what could be a fifth wave and a lot more restrictions?
Yeah, they are. Hopefully not a lot of restrictions, hopefully proactive measures to get as many people vaccinated as possible. And as we heard Dr. Dina Hinshaw just discuss, the goal is obviously get as many first doses in as possible. There's still a lot of people without a first dose, and get them first and second doses, then expand third dose eligibility, and also expand the eligibility to younger cohorts, like the 5 to 11-year-old cohorts. And remember, these vaccines are very likely to have significant protection against this new variant. Of course, we can't quantify that yet. It's not as if a variant is going to emerge that completely erases the protective benefit of the vaccines. So still, vaccination and public health measures are our best efforts.
How long are we going to know if the vaccines are effective enough that we can, you know, be careful, but it's not going to, you know, run amok and be this kind of we're back to square one?
Weeks, I think days to weeks. We're already starting to get early data. They're anecdotal data, so it has to be kept in the appropriate context. And early next week, we'll probably hear some very early laboratory data. And coupled with that, in the next week or 2 weeks ahead, we'll have more and more robust epidemiologic data. And we'll put all those pieces together to build a picture to see exactly what this variant can do and hopefully what it can't do.
Science and politics, Lisa Raitt, you're a former transport minister. You understand this. What are you looking for tomorrow from the Biden administration? And what should Canadians on the precipice of the travel season here be bracing for?
You nailed it, Evan. So I understand what the ministers announced yesterday, and I know we're waiting to see what Joe Biden has to say about what's going to happen domestically and internationally in the United States. But here's a clear message to Canadians. We have no idea whether or not this particular strain is going to be super contagious or how difficult it's going to be for Canadians or anybody else around the world. If you are traveling to a foreign country, you need to be prepared for the fact that if Omicron does, in fact, take a great, I guess, it takes up housing in that country, and you test positive, you're in that country for 14 days. And when you do travel, you may very well get stranded. And these are things that have to be borne in mind when people are making their travel plans. And travel plans have been made already, Evan. People are already going to Mexico or Costa Rica. They're going away for Christmas holidays. I mean, the government really needs to come out and give granular examples of what could happen to traveling public. Because right now, I don't think it's understood widely.
Carl Doxeter, I mean, you're on the front lines of this. What are you hearing from folks? Are people scrambling to get booster shots, or are they concerned about travel?
Yeah, I mean, I think getting a booster shot is crucial. And I think to echo what Dr. Bogosh has been saying, both today and in other formats, like everything you can do from masking to getting more shots to getting as much protection as possible. But I don't think the travel bans are the solution. And I do think that vaccine equity is crucial here. South Africa has 29% of people that are vaccinated, and Canada is pushing like 80% of people that are double vaccinated. It's time for vaccine equity. I think travel bans are just political solutions, and I'm hoping that the Biden administration acknowledges that tomorrow.
Yeah, Tonda, I talked to Bob Ray about it, the Canadian ambassador to the United Nations. He said, look, that Carl may be right, but politics, your obligation is to protect your citizens first. That's the reality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that is the reality, and we've already seen the Canadian government confront that in the last few waves, where they basically said, we will look after Canadians first in terms of vaccination supply, and we will share. They're trying to walk that line. And I don't expect you can expect that to change. Carl makes a really good point about the need to get vaccinations into the developing world. I think the Trudeau government has acknowledged that. But the political reality that Biden and Trudeau face is they are required to look after the health and safety of their own citizens, and they will make that priority number one. We've already seen that. To Lisa's point about Canadians not really realizing what might be in store for them, that may be true, and there ought to be a big public awareness campaign going on about the fact that this is not over and what potentially people could face. But I think also, let's not be naive here. I mean, nobody has ever declared this over, and everybody has known that travel brings with it a big risk. You know, unfortunately for all of us, it's at the time when we most need a break and would most like to see family and friends, right? So, yeah, huge, huge political challenge in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
Yeah, I don't want to use a political word here, a technical word, but it sucks. Doc, how soon are we going to get, Doc, what about booster shots? Is there going to be a big push? Do you think people will need a booster shot ASAP?
Yeah, so forget Omicron. Let's just think about Delta, which, of course, that's the elephant in the room. That's what we have in Canada now. Yes, we have a handful of cases of Omicron. We'll probably see more and more of that. But, like, the vast majority of cases are Delta. We know there's some waning protection with time with the Delta variant. And we need to get expanded third doses. And we are hearing the various provinces announce this. We might hear something from NACI tomorrow. This makes sense. Like, do we all need a third dose right now? No. But certainly more people do than are receiving now. And we'll likely see growing and expanding eligibility for third doses. That's the right move. One other quick point is it might also be the right move with Omicron. We'll need to hear more about that in the weeks ahead. And, of course, if you need to pivot and further expand eligibility for third doses, then do it.
Two out of three ain't bad, but three is better than two, I guess. Lisa, let me quickly, if I have time, I want to ask you about this unanimous passing of the conversion therapy bill in the House. I think Tonda, as another fellow watcher, I was kind of surprised about this. We were expecting a conservative free vote on the bill. Then conservative MP Rob Moore introduced the fast track bill. What did that tell you about what are the politics of that for you, Lisa?
Politics are they had a caucus meeting this morning. I don't know if it was discussed, but I would assume it was discussed because conservatives talk about everything in those caucus meetings. And the result was Rob Moore standing up and asking for unanimous consent at all stages to pass the bill and hand it over to the Senate. So to me, that means the caucus came to an agreement on how they were going to treat this bill and how are they going to move forward. And I'm pleased to see that an issue like this will not be politicized by any of the parties because there's unanimity on this and they're just going to get the work done.
Yeah, it's good work. Tonda, what was your read about the Conservatives kind of even surprised the Liberals on this?
Mm-hmm. Big surprise for the Liberals and took a wedge away from the Liberals because they've been using it for months against the Conservatives. So it takes a wedge away for now in the House of Commons. We got a clear signal today. The debate is not over in the Senate. They will tackle this bill, particularly because it extends the ban on conversion therapy to discussions among adults. And that doesn't sit well with some people, but we'll see if this goodwill to pass it continues into the Senate.
And then finally, Carl, in the last couple of seconds I've got, it certainly shows Aaron O'Toole may be starting to really assert control over the party he wants to see.
Yeah, this could be a sign, but I think that a lot of this is strategic and positioning. But it's about time. I mean, the third time's a charm. I guess it's taken way too long for this to happen.
Whether it's positioning history was made today, so that was just great to see.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, history was made. It was unanimous and on something that will nice to see. Even all the MPs, 338, can agree on that. Okay, Tonda McCharles, Carl Dockstader, Lisa Raitt, Dr. Isaac Bogosh. If we can get 338 people on Parliament Hill to agree, which never happens, there is some hope in the world. Okay, great to have the four of you. I know Dr. Bogosh got to go celebrate Hanukkah. Happy Hanukkah to you. I'll be celebrating, of course, a little later. That is your Power Play Day in politics, fourth night, that's right. We'll be back here in 23 short hours. Hug your loved ones. It's a great privilege if you can do it, believe me. And we hope you can continue to do it throughout the holidays. Have a great evening.